Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Late Night.
This is Late Night.
On Sports Radio WEEI. Boston Sports Talk for Insomniacs and the Graveyard Pack. Let's get it going with Patrick Gilroy. Late Night. On Sports Radio WEEI.
Hour number two, Sports Radio WEEI. It is Late Night. I am Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. And I understand that that first hour was sort of a heavier hour than what we're used to here. It's just some stuff that really hit home today. The combination for me of hanging out with these younger people today, the younger generation, the millennials, kids in college, in a communication school that were interested in hearing from media professionals from all walks of the media, radio, TV. We were represented there very well. Ben Volen from the print media, he was there. And these kids had great, poignant questions. And it was a lively discussion for a couple of hours. And I got to tell you, you know, the millennials get accused of not being the hardest workers in the building, and maybe they're not. You know, my experience with them, hiring them in my office, no. They want to. They want the promotion, and they want it within 2 weeks of starting. They want to make $100,000 within a month of being there. They don't want to put the work in. They don't want to earn it. They've got that sort of reputation. But these kids I met tonight, I don't know about their work ethic, but I do know about the type of people that they appear to be. They've got legitimately good souls, and they've got good conscience, where they want to hold their generation up to a higher standard than our generation held people up to. And I give them a tremendous amount of credit for that. And that combined with Reamer's column today on WEI.com, where he called out Peter King for the complete hypocrisy of what Peter King sort of stands for and the things that he says. And when you're Peter King and you go on WEI, you know Peter King goes on radio stations across the country. And for those of you guys that are avid listeners of WEI and have heard Peter King here with Dale Arnold for years, you know that Peter King loves himself some Peter King. He just does. All right. He thinks that he is the star. It's not about covering the athletes for Peter King. It's about getting his own brand out there. It's about making Peter King the center of the story. But when you talk and you have diarrhea of the mouth the way that Peter King does, sometimes you sort of step on your own words and you say things that don't quite jive with other things that you've said in the past. And you say things that you have to sit back and say, really, then what's the real motivation for what Peter is saying here? And real quick, when you get to what Peter King said, and if you don't have a chance to check it out on WEI.com, I mean, the Cliff Notes version here is that Peter King came down and came down pretty hard on Barstool and on Barstool's multiple platforms that they use, be it satellite radio, be it the website and everything in between, saying that he would never lend his voice to Barstool again. And he was a pretty regular contributor, at least on the radio front. He was a regular guest on the radio front, you know, talking about the NFL, doing what Peter King does, because Peter King gets an opportunity to pub his weekly stuff. It used to be Monday Morning Quarterback. It's called something else now, but it's the same thing. He'll get to, you know, it's an exchange of goods. He gets to pub his piece, and in exchange, you know, he comes on the radio, and it works out for everybody involved. And Peter King does it, and everybody does it. But now Peter King, no. He doesn't want to go on Barstool anymore because Barstool treats women poorly. It's not a good environment for women, according to Peter King. Is he a woman? Does he understand the environment? Because multiple women that work there full-time came out and said it's a great environment. But all that being said, Peter King can have that opinion. I don't care. If he had said that he doesn't want to be a part of Barstool anymore because it's not worth it to him, he doesn't like the way they treat women, that's fine unto itself. But when you combine that with other things that Peter has got on his soapbox for over the years, specifically his defense of Darren Sharper and his pursuit of getting Darren Sharper into the NFL Hall of Fame, you have to ask yourself, when you look at the crimes that Sharper's been accused of and when you look at the crimes that he's been charged with, you've got to ask yourself, how does one jive with the other, because they don't. If you're really all about treating women better, and if you're really all about not cultivating a space, cultivating a workspace or a culture like Barstool Sports, so therefore you're going to pull yourself away and no longer lend your name or your brand to what Barstool does. If you're going to do that and get on that soapbox, and then you go vote for and advocate for a guy in Darren Sharper that's been charged with here, two women in Los Angeles, drugging and raping them, but there are multiple similar accusations, not charges, but similar accusations from other women over the years. Guy's a bad dude, and he's done exactly what you don't like. He's taken advantage of women. So for me, it's all about consistency. And then you have to ask yourself, it's not just Darren Sharper. I mean, it's a bunch of these guys. It's Warren Sapp. It's Marshall Faulk. It's Warren Moon. You can go up and down the list. It's Ike Taylor, Jameis Winston, guys that are future Hall of Famers potentially, current Hall of Famers potentially, guys that are already in, guys that are on their way in, or guys that would like to be in someday. And it's not just the NFL, and it's not just players. It's owners as well. When you look at Mark Cuban and the incredible amount of money that he has, he's a dot-com billionaire, and he cultivated this workplace culture where sexual aggressiveness was allowed. Sexual aggression was the norm, according to people that work in the Dallas Mavericks organization. And that stemmed from the way that Mark treated women. Yet we celebrate Mark Cuban each and every week. He is on a national network show, a top 10 show, and he has been for a decade.
And Shark Donald Tank. Sterling had to sell his team.
Yeah, exactly. A crazy old kooky old man had to sell his team.
For being videotaped in his own living room.
It's banana land that we live in. We pick and choose our spots so well here. You know, Bill Cosby, an 80-year-old blind dude, he's in jail. He deserves to be in jail. But how do you put him in jail and put Kobe Bryant in the Hall of Fame? You know, there is no middle ground here. And I guess that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some common sense when it comes to these Halls of Fames. For all of the major sports, Mike Tyson, he has become a cartoon character. He is a friendly, funny voice these days. Mike Tyson is somebody who literally is in movies being a cartoon character of himself, a caricature of himself. That's how far he's come. People forget that he raped an 18-year-old girl violently. And went
a little scared man.
And he went to jail for it, right? He raped her violently, and you know, this is a scary, scary dude. But because he's in the Hangover movies and he's a funny guy and he understands he's got a goofy voice, he's completely changed who he is and the way that people look at him. And the younger generation doesn't even know how scary of a person he used to be. And not just scary in the ring, but a scary, soulless human being. Because that's what you have to be to commit some of these crimes and wake up the next day and feel okay about it and move on with your life. How your conscience doesn't destroy you, how your conscience doesn't crush you, if you're Kobe Bryant, if you're Mike Tyson, if you're Mark Cuban, is beyond me. Because if that were ever me, and I can only speak for myself, we all put ourselves in bad situations, especially when we're younger and there's alcohol and or drugs involved. We've all been in bad situations. However, if you cross a line and you do some of the things that these guys are accused of doing, I would hope that somewhere inside you, you've got that voice that says, what the hell are you doing? Stop. And if you cross that line, how do you wake up the next day and cut a check and move on without being crushed by guilt? That's the part of this that I'll never, ever, ever understand. But they're all able to do it. They're all able to wake up the next day, feel fine about themselves. Somebody else will handle the crime that you committed the night before with your money, and you move on. And then we immortalize you in the Hall of Fame someday. That's the part of it that I find inexcusable. That's the part of it that I feel like, as a society, we've got some semblance of control over. There's got to be a way to hold these guys to a high enough level of accountability where, sure, you can move on with your life if you get away with it. If you paid somebody off, if you are found not guilty, whatever the situation is, nobody's going to prevent you from being a free, standing member of society. You don't need to go to jail if that's the case. But you don't need to be in the Hall of Fame either. That's the part of it that I don't understand. Why do we continue to voluntarily vote these guys in when you know that they're bad people? Are they worth immortalizing forever? So it is Sports Radio. WEI, it is late night. We'll continue that conversation as we make our way into some Celtics talk as well as some Red Sox talk as well. But right now, let's get back out to the phone calls. Let's go to Adam. Adam's in New Hampshire. Adam, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, how's it going tonight?
What's up, Adam?
Not too much. Great job so far, kind of highlighting how Peter King's a bit of a hypocrite. And so you've done a great job on the show so far, but let's switch it up to a little bit more local sports talk. I was calling to talk about a couple of the major decisions that have been made in the last week or two with both the Celtics and the Red Sox.
Okay, let's do it.
So first of which, obviously, the biggest one, Kyrie Irving committing to the Celtics. I think that's definitely going to, both in the short term, kind of make everybody at ease, kind of they'll be able to not have that monkey on their back throughout the season, and I think it's definitely going to make everybody play a little bit better, but it's also going to show a little bit more of how the future is going to be structured for the Celtics as well. They don't have to, worry about him going to the Knicks or so on and so forth, but I think it's definitely going to help the structure with the Celtics as well.
Well, I'll tell you, the beauty of what he did was, and the night before that he announced it publicly, he had his entire team come over to his house, and he told the team quietly there, held a sort of like a players-only meeting. The next day he went to work, and he told Danny Ainge, and he told Brad Stevens his intentions. And then he told the fans that night. So by virtue of him telling his teammates and telling his coaching staff and ownership and general manager behind closed doors, you know that he meant it. It wasn't just a publicity stunt. It wasn't just something for good PR. And what I love about it is the fact that it removes that unnecessary distraction from this team. It's a team that has championship hopes, right? But you don't want to deal with any distractions if you're trying to win a championship. And I think Kyrie understood that. And by doing this, he puts the focus back on the team and not on Kyrie Irving.
And I think it also shows the respect that everybody on the team has for him, that we didn't really hear about it until it happened at the ceremony, so to speak. We didn't hear about that players-only meeting. Those teams that don't have the best chemistry – that probably would have gotten out. An anonymous source kind of would have leaked that at some point.
No, you're right about that. It's a good point. But the other part of this that I don't want to see happen, and I hope this never comes to fruition, but let's hypothetically throw this out there. Let's say that his surgically repaired knee gives out halfway through the season. And as a free agent, as an impending free agent, well, his value has then just completely plummeted, because that would mean back-to-back years he's missed significant time at 26 years old with a knee that's been bugging him since college. I mean, that's the fact of the matter is this knee has been a bit of a problem for years. He's managed the problem and managed it well, but let's hypothetically go down this road. Are the Celtics now beholden to him to sign him to this max long-term extension? Or does Danny Ainge have the stones to walk away and say, you know, Kyrie, thanks, but no thanks, you're damaged goods?
I certainly wouldn't put it past Ainge to come out with some explosive move or something, but I think it kind of does kind of lock them into Kyrie Irving. Even when he had a bum knee last year, he was clearly dealing with a lot of stuff that he wasn't necessarily complaining about. He was on a highlight film just about every single night with what he can do with a basketball, between shooting, between the dribbling. He's arguably the best kind of the dribbler in the NBA.
Oh, yeah, he's the best ball handler in the league right now. Yep, he is. But what else you got, man?
And then just going to the Red Sox with David Price starting for game two. I think a couple of the reasons why I think Alex Cora did it, A, I truly don't think that there's as much pressure in game two as there is in game four. Yes, if Chris Sale happens to lose game one, they're going to be down 0-1 and he could go to 0-2. But let's think on the positive. Chris Sale's going to win it. They're going to be at home. They have a day off. They don't have to worry about the bullpen kind of eating too much innings in that game. They're going to all be able to rest between them going to Houston. And I think if David Price had to start game four, whether they're up 2-1 or down 1-2, I don't think he's going to handle that well. Either he's going to get the potential loss and get Houston back into the series, or he's going to get the loss and bring him down 1-3. I think there's a lot less pressure in game two. And hey, if he wins it, Alex Cora looks like a genius.
Listen, I appreciate the phone call. Here's my problem with the whole David Price decision. And it's a shame you didn't listen last night, because we did 4 full hours on David Price. I went home and I had nightmares about David Price. But here's my problem in general. David Price is another one of these guys that's a victim of his own diarrhea of the mouth. All right, he's told us all multiple times this year about his issues and what he has trouble pitching through. So if you take a look at the weather for this weekend at Fenway Park, it's supposed to be somewhere in the mid to high 40s at its warmest at night. Okay, it's going to be drizzly, potentially rainy, and cold. This is a guy that says that he's had problems with his extremities, so his fingers and his toes, and blood circulation in cold weather for years. Remember, when he struggled out of the gate in April, that's what he blamed it on, all right? And then the carpal tunnel came into the situation too, so you deal with the carpal tunnel. And then all of a sudden, all right, during spring allergy season, he told us that he can't handle fresh-cut grass and flowers and pollen and cats and everything else. So when you've got the opportunity to potentially throw David Price in this uncontrollable, uncontrolled weather environment where we know ahead of time that it's going to be chilly, it's not going to be ideal temperatures and ideal conditions for David Price. It's going to be chilly. It's going to be wet. There's going to be fall allergies, I'm sure. You know, his carpal tunnel might kick up because he's got poor circulation in his fingers and toes. Why would you choose to throw him there when you could throw him in a controlled environment in Houston where it's going to be 68 to 70 degrees, zero humidity, zero pollen, zero drizzle, zero cats, zero fresh-cut grass? All that stuff is off the table. It can just be David Price pitching in a perfectly controlled environment, a la what Peyton Manning did for years, throwing in a dome. I mean, you can't tell me that that didn't help pad Peyton Manning's numbers and make him look a lot better than he probably really was. Could you imagine Peyton Manning playing 20 years in the same conditions that Tom Brady's played in? No, it would never work. He's not that type of player. He's not that type of quarterback. Not to take anything away from Peyton, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, who's also, by the way, had his problems with women accusing him of doing things, but that's besides the point, all right? When you look at Peyton Manning, he's somebody that benefited from playing in that controlled environment. And he took advantage of it, and that's great for him. You have to take advantage of the situation that you've been dealt. And he was dealt that situation, and he was perfect for that situation. And I feel very similarly about David Price. He's not the toughest guy in the world, and he's a guy that needs things to be just right. And in this particular series, because you're playing a team that plays in a dome, because you're playing a team that plays in a controlled environment, why wouldn't you take advantage of that situation and put him in this perfectly controlled environment without the pressures, by the way, of playing before the home crowd that you know the moment he starts to struggle is going to turn on him? And David Price is so deep in his own head right now, I just don't see it ending well with him pitching at Fenway versus going on the road, not dealing with the Fenway crowd, not dealing with the weather, not dealing with the drizzle, not dealing with the extremities going cold and not enough circulation. All that stuff is off the table. It's just him and the baseball and hopefully the perfect weather environment to do his job. So I understand all your points for why logistically or why when it comes to baseball sort of strategy-wise, why game two might make sense. I get all that, and that you're not making bad points. I'll take your points, but I'll say this. I feel like putting him in the perfect baseball environment for David Price, the unique guy that needs all these controlled things to be just right for him to excel, you've got the rare opportunity to give him everything he needs. Everything on his wish list, control-wise, weather-wise, is right there for him in Houston at Minute Maid Park. And instead, what are you doing? You're subjecting him to potentially pitching twice in this series. That's your first mistake. And your second mistake is you're subjecting him to New England weather in the fall on what's supposed to be a cold and rainy night. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But it is sports radio, WEI. It is late night. When we come back, I promise you we'll get to the rest of your phone calls. We'll continue this Red Sox stuff, continue the David Price stuff. And still, I do want this question answered before we get out of here today. All right, we've talked about a lot of other stuff here, but I want to know from Red Sox fans, guys that put their time and money and effort and energy and enthusiasm into this Red Sox team this year. If you're one of the many that flocked back to Fenway this year, if you are one of the many that came back to WEI this year, if you're one of the many that helped inflate Nesson's ratings again this year and helped sort of normalize and stabilize Red Sox baseball and the consumption of Red Sox baseball in New England, because it has been historically down over the last few years. You could walk into Fenway Park and buy a playoff ticket last year. None of that goes anymore. Fenway's banged out every night. EEI's ratings are back where they used to be. Nesson's ratings are higher than ever for the Red Sox. So if you're one of the many that have come back to the Sox, will you stick around if this team bows out early in the ALCS? I want to talk about that too when we come back right here, Sports Radio, WEI.
Talk all Boston sports with Patrick Gilroy on Sports Radio WEEI.
I know that team. I know how that ballpark plays. I know the short porch. I know we have the big wall here, but I think those righties at Minute Maid, they make more sense than the lefties in Minute Maid Park or whatever they call it. Is that what it's called? Minute Maid?
I'm not even sure.
I think so. Yeah, it used to be Enron or something.
Yeah,
like
they
that.
Yeah, they keep on changing these things. You lose.
yeah.
You'll... Alex Cora there with OMF, and again, talking about David Price and his decision to pitch David Price in Game 2. And Alex Cora has batted 1,000 in this postseason. So who the hell am I to judge and to question what he's doing? I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around and this decision. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I've seen David Price perform and perform miserably in pressure-packed situations too many times now. In just his recent time here in Boston, he's 0-6 against the Yankees. You know, he can't win at Yankee Stadium. He can't beat the Yankees at Fenway Park. And those are big games. They're nationally televised games. Usually there's enhanced and increased media presence around those games because of the rivalry, because of what New York and Boston is. So his struggles aren't exclusive to the postseason. They seem to be the bigger the game, the more likely he is to choke. That's what he's sort of become. And in meaningless games in July and August and September, when the Red Sox are either too far ahead or too far behind for the games to really matter, well, that's when he performs at his best. Case in point, this year, the Red Sox had run away with the division. And during that period of time where the Red Sox sort of pulled away from the Yankees and the division was no longer a race, it was the Yankees competing and trying to make sure that they put themselves in a position to remain the wild card team, because it was clear at this point the Red Sox, barring a historic collapse, were going to be the division winner. That's when David Price went on his great run this year, where for that 9 or 10 game stretch, he was literally the best pitcher in baseball post All-Star break. At one point, he had posted like a 1.64 ERA and was striking out 10.5 per 9 innings. He looked like the old David Price. He looked like the guy that the Red Sox paid $31 million a year to, the guy the Red Sox pay $85,000 a day, 365 days a year to. It's a staggering number, but that's the amount of money that he makes. He basically gets $1 million per start, win, lose, or draw. I mean, he's way overpaid. He's never going to live up to his salary. But for that 10-game stretch, we got teased. It was like a little tickler. We got it. We got to see what the Red Sox are in David Price. Unfortunately, those games didn't really matter. The Red Sox were no longer locked into a divisional race, and David Price knew the games didn't matter. So he went out there just free as a bird with nothing to lose, and that's when a guy like David Price is at his best. It is, and that's just the facts. Now, I would love nothing more than to be wrong here. I would love nothing more than for David Price to change the narrative and change the tune. And what I said last night, I feel like that still stands here. Because David Price's performances in the postseason, with the exception of one, he pitched one really good game when he was with Detroit a few years ago, when 8 innings, only gave up 2 runs, had 8 strikeouts. He was excellent, and he was the victim of bad luck, and he wound up taking the L. But other than that game, he's been abysmal, and he's 0-10 in the postseason as a starter. So because he's been abysmal and been abysmal for a decade in the postseason, with postseason runs with Tampa Bay, postseason runs with Toronto, with the Tigers, and now with the Red Sox, I mean, this is not, you know, something that's mutually exclusive to Boston. He has sucked in the postseason everywhere he's been, with the exception of coming out of the bullpen as a rookie against the Red Sox when he was with the Rays, and coming out of the bullpen last year for the Red Sox when he was hurt. But as far as being a starter in the postseason, he has historically been abysmal. And because he has been so bad, he's going to give himself an opportunity here to be thought of in a better light than he should be. And I say that because how do we feel if David Price goes out there and he gives you 6 innings, 7 strikeouts, gives up 3 runs, on 6 hits. I feel like he gets a standing ovation. He'll be forced to tip his cap. That place will be so loud. That's an average baseball start. That's what you would expect from I don't know, Nathan Eovaldi. All right? If Nathan Eovaldi gave you that, then that's an outstanding start. If Rick Porcello gave you that, that's a Rick Porcello start that you're looking for. But shouldn't David Price be held to a higher standard than Rick Porcello and Nathan $1 million a year Eovaldi? Like, that's the part that I can't compute here. But because he has been that bad in the postseason, guess what? The bar has been set very, very low when it comes to what we're going to consider a successful start for David Price in the postseason. So Alex Cora, as well-spoken as he is, And for as well-reasoned as he is, there is no doubt in my mind that Alex Cora has got reasons that he believes in to start David Price in Game 2. To me, it doesn't really matter what those reasons are. David Price himself, the pitcher himself, has told us this year, this is recent history, he has told us this year, if you just listen and go back to April, and the weather in April in the evening is very similar to the weather in October in the evening. It is chilly, it is damp, and that's what he's going to be facing here at Fenway Park this weekend. And what did David Price say? He said when it's cold, he loses circulation to his fingers and toes, and that carpal tunnel gets flared up. And that's when he was awful, and we talked about Fortnite and carpal tunnel and the allergies and the fresh-cut grass and the cats and all that stuff. And I just feel like we're inviting all that stuff to come back. When you don't need to do that, just throw him in Game 3 or throw him in Game 4 when he's in a controlled environment with central air and no humidity. And it's just right for the very delicate flower that is David Price. What is Sports Radio? WEEI, it is Late Night. I am Patrick Gilroy. Let's continue with our phone calls. Let's go to Patrick. Patrick is at work. Patrick, you're next up here on WEEI.
Hey, Pat. How are you, man?
What's up, man?
Not much. I was kind of laughing earlier when you were talking about millennials. You know, unfortunately, in my line of work, you know, we have a lot of those here, and it's, you know, no one wants to work. I get no call, no shows all the time. You know, they're terrible, man. It's just funny how that generation, their worst ethics are just not what ours are, you know.
But, it's hilarious because, you know, when I'm hiring somebody in my day job, you know, I'm given, let's say, a budget of $40,000 to hire somebody. And that's not a bad salary for somebody right out of college, 23 years old, right? They come in and they see what I'm 40 or just about 40. They see what I make or what one of my coworkers who's in a similar spot makes. And within 2 or 3 months, I promise you, they are in the owner's office saying, it's not fair. Patrick makes this and I make this. It's like, really, dude? Because I just put in the last 17 years. What have you done? But they want it and they want it right away. And those are just the ones that show up. You know, like you said, a lot of them, they just decide not to call anymore. You know, they don't even – it's no call, no show. It's unbelievable. And that's why to put a positive spin on it, though, Pat, that's why I was so impressed with the kids that I met tonight at Emerson College. You know, I don't know what they're like, what their work ethic is going to be like. But I can tell you this. These kids had a bit of a conscience, and they've had a level of morality that I feel like my generation, your generation – really lost, because we grew up with, you know, Clinton in the White House, and I'm a Democrat, but, you know, not for nothing, you know, BJ's in the White House can bring down the moral compass of the country, and, you know, these things became the norm, and Kobe Bryant being accused of rape, and Mike Tyson, you know, a rapist that goes to jail, comes out, and people spend $50 to watch him on pay-per-view in his first time back. We really became conditioned to this stuff, and these kids, I feel like they want to sort of turn it back to the way that it used to be. And I applaud them for that. They don't want to put Kobe in the Hall of Fame because they don't want to immortalize a guy that raped somebody. And maybe that's idealistic, but I feel like our country could use a little bit more of that.
Right. And, you know, just to touch base on the Red Sox, you know, I've been a Red Sox fan my whole life, you know, and I'll always go back to the Red Sox. It's just the way it is, you know, but this season that we've had, you know, JD hitting 43 home runs in the regular season, I think it was, and Bogey, you know, having 100 RBIs, Betts going 30 for 30. You know, it was great the way we handled the Yankees. I don't think anyone expected it, taking care of them in Yankee Stadium like that.
Right, yep.
But it's not good enough. It's not good enough. After what Houston did to us last year and the couple of runs that we had the last couple of years, you know, we have to get the job done. And I think if we can get through Houston, I think the World Series is ours. I think momentum will be on our side for sure. I think there's no stopping these guys if we can get past Houston. I would definitely not be throwing Price Game 2, although Cora, obviously, he has faith in the guy, and I think, you know, he's hoping we can get a two-game jump on him being at home and, you know, hopefully just get it done that way and get a nice start. But after the way Nathan threw, I would definitely be going with him Game 2, you know, and I just, you know, I'm really praying that we can take care of this.
I look at Price and I look at Cora's decision, and I know he gave OMF a lot of good reasons why he's going to throw him in Game 2, but I feel like the real reason why he's throwing him in Game 2 is something that he'll never admit. But I think it's more of he knows David Price. He knows that David Price is fractured upstairs. He doesn't have the sort of self-confidence that you would expect an ace-type guy to have. He questions everything he does out there on the mound in the postseason. And I feel like after that first performance, Cora right now is almost trying to show too much faith in David Price, because Alex Cora is a smart man and he knows that he's got to build this guy up in order to get a good performance out of him. And he also knows that, and this is what I truly believe, Pat, is that this team can win a World Series, but they cannot win a World Series without getting at least one or two contributions from David Price somewhere along the way. You can't have a guy that eats up that much of your salary, a guy that's thought of as being an ace of a staff up until they got Chris Sale here, so he's sort of like 1B on this staff, but a guy with that sort of talent, a six-time All-Star, a track record of tremendous success throughout the regular seasons over the last 10 or 11 years, you can't expect to win a World Series and get nothing from him. And I feel like Cora feels like the best way to get something from David Price is to show David Price that we still believe in him.
Right, right. And I totally agree with that. You know, and I was actually just going to say that, you know, we can't win a World Series without at least a couple, you know, two great stars from David Price, you know, here in this postseason. You know, but I have faith in David Price. I do. I know it's been a long road and the fans have had, you know, difficult times with him, but I think he has it in him. I really do.
Oh, Pat, before I got to get out of here, but before you go, real quick, you just said something that I always want to ask this question, and I never do. You said you have faith in David Price. So my question is, why? What has he done to put faith in? Like, I don't understand why he deserves your faith.
You know, and that is a good question, and sometimes I ask myself that. You know, I just kind of I think back to the days, you know, when he was in Tampa Bay and just like all the, you know, glimpses of greatness that he has had. You know, I'm just kind of hoping that we have some miracle here like we did in 04, you know, when we had Schilling and Pedro and,
yep.
You know, we can just kind of have, you know, a miracle, Pat. That's what I'm hoping for here. You know, this is the season we're going to do it.
I love it.
This is the season we're going to do it, man.
That was the most honest answer.
It's going to be this year.
It was the most honest answer I could have ever asked for, Patrick. I appreciate the phone call. We're down to miracles now. This is unbelievable. Why do you have faith in David Price? Because I believe in God. He is my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and he's going to grant a miracle upon David Price's shoulder this weekend. I feel like God's got better things to do. He's going to somehow find a way for Kobe Bryant to remain a Hall of Famer throughout these millennials trying to rip him out of the Hall of Fame. Doesn't belong there. God's going to get involved. I mean, really, we're down to this. We're down to hoping for miracles here. And that doesn't have to be the case. I feel like you could have put David Price in a position to succeed by taking out all those outside variables and just pitching them in the perfect environment for David Price. But instead, I feel like this is much more of a psychological decision. And maybe I'm way off. Corey gave a litany of baseball reasons why he's pitching David Price in game two. I think it's very simple. He's trying too hard to show a tremendous amount of faith and build up this guy's self-esteem like he's a chubby 12-year-old girl who's feeling bad about herself because her sixth grade class is making fun of her. It is Sports Radio WEI. It is late night. When we come back, we'll wrap this mess up right here, Sports Radio WEI.
Back to more of Late Night with Patrick Gilroy on Sports Radio WEI.
Final segment here, Late Night, Sports Radio WEI. Now, you guys know I've been here quite a bit the last couple of weeks, and it's been fun. It's been awesome. I'm looking forward to taking a deep breath. There's no late night on Friday nights, and that's fine. You know, part of me always wants to be the overachiever and send Joey an email and send Chris an email and say, hey, you know, if we're looking to keep late night going, we're here Sunday with late night. Like, why do we not do it on Friday? It's never made a lot of sense to me. And I feel like every Friday morning, I'm about to hit send on that email. Say, hey, I'm game, guys. Let's do late night on Fridays. And then by about noontime, I'm thinking to myself, I'm glad I didn't send that email. As much as I love doing this, I'm really looking forward to catching my breath. But just a couple of things. I'll be back here early next week, Monday night, for late night. And at that point, we're going to have a much better idea of what we're dealing with here in Boston. We have talked a lot over the last 2 or 3 months about the Red Sox, about the Patriots, and about the Celtics, and about how all three of those teams, legitimately, bar none, have got a real shot at winning a championship this year. The Red Sox have got a damn good chance at least making a World Series, and if they make the World Series, then what is to stop them? Who is to stop them from winning that World Series? There's four teams left, and that's why David Price pitching and pitching effectively, if they can somehow find a way to revert him back to David Price regular season when the games don't matter form. And I understand that's a big ask, but if you can get him there, then that gives the Red Sox an unfair advantage that other teams simply cannot match. You then have the best 1-2 punch in baseball because so far so good with Chris Sale. The Chris Sale injury experiment seems to have worked out very, very well for your Boston Red Sox. So now that you've got Chris Sale right, You need to get David Price to at least be a solid contributing member of this team. And if you can do that, that gives you this unfair advantage that other teams can't match. They've got a real shot to win a World Series. Patriots, they look like they're getting back on track, don't they? We're going to know just how far back on that track they are coming up after this weekend. You know, if they're able to somehow find a way to hand Kansas City their first loss, well, then I think undoubtedly, you know, the Patriots are back to being the Patriots. And when the Patriots are the Patriots, well, then they're a favorite to get to a Super Bowl, first round bye, AFC championship, all that stuff that comes with being a Patriots fan. And of course, the Celtics, they kick off their regular season the following day. So on Monday, we'll do some heavy previewing of the Celtics opening night Tuesday at the Garden against the Sixers. And they're going to have a real opportunity to win a championship this year. So two out of those three teams, the Patriots and Red Sox, if they win, if the Red Sox are 2-0 or even 1-1 and the Patriots win, we'll have a very happy show here on Monday. I promise you that. But if they go 0-3, we're going to talk Celtics for the full 4 hours. That's what we're going to do. We're going to turn the page. But as of right now, as of today on Late Night, three of your teams have got a real shot to win a championship this year. Think about that. And think about that until Monday. A big thank you goes out to my friends at Emerson College tonight. Incredible stuff. Their Society of Professional Journalists. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having Ben Volen. That was fun. Check it out online on Twitter, on Facebook. As for me, I'm out of here. I'll talk to you guys on Monday. Bye-bye.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.